Thank you for staying with us for our monthly special edition of the Daily Drum with our sister station, WHUT-TV. Our discussion tonight is COVID-19, 365 days later. And again, we want to remind you that we're not taking any phone calls, but we invite you to join us on social media using the hashtag COVID365. In this segment, we're going to take a look at the human cost of the pandemic and how we respond to what's likely to be a lingering psychological impact that will be felt for many, many years to come. I want to introduce you to our second panel, Dr. Frieda Lewis Hall. She's a trained psychiatrist and life scientist leader who has held roles in academia, medical research, frontline patient care, and a global biopharmaceutical company. And also Dina Taveras. She's a Prince George's County Council member representing District 2. She is also vice chair of the Prince George's County Council. She joins us not only as a lawmaker and a public servant, but also as a person who knows all too well the toll the pandemic has taken on millions of families. Ladies, thank you so much for joining the conversation. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having us.
I want to start with you, Council Member. And this is a really delicate situation, and I appreciate you coming on and opening up to us about some difficult private issues. You have lost six members of your family to COVID-19 and have had 16 members infected. How do you, as a public servant, do your job and maintain your sanity, your mental health, when you are bearing the burden of this horrible loss? You may be on mute. We may need to unmute you.
You're right about that.
Here we go. Go right ahead.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the invitation, and hello to all your listening audience, and to Dr. Lewis Hall. It's an honor to be with you this evening. For me, it's been difficult, right? The thing is that I come from a family of immigrants. We come from strong stock, and we're a people that know how to survive, right? So, I mean, you have to, in this particular situation, you've got to compartmentalize, you know, on how to do things. And so when my community, which is the hardest struck in the entire DMV, I have the smallest district in all of Prince George's County, and one out of every five county residents that's infected by COVID lives in my district. That's just to give you a scale of the level of contagion that exists in my community and where I currently live. And my zip code right here where I live is the zip code with the greatest level of contagion in all of the DMV, Virginia, DC, and Maryland. So to speak to that, I just couldn't. I couldn't stand by and not do anything. I couldn't go into myself and just feel myself, even though I had the right to. So, you know, we had to be able to respond. We had to be able to come up with food, rent assistance, help, medicine for COVID-19 families. I had households that had 10 people infected. We've been able to provide over 2 million pounds of food here in my district over this last 365 days. So I can tell you, I didn't have time to mourn.
Have you taken a moment for yourself? Because the need is still there. All of the things you just mentioned are still critical. And even though we see some changes happening in Prince George's County, my father used to say, you can't help others unless you take care of yourself. Have you in some way, shape, or form been able to take care of yourself so that you can continue to serve the constituency that elected you?
Well, I believe in proper mental health. So I have someone I talk to And that allows me my ability to vent and keep my mind bright and sane. I do something very small, but I think to me means a whole lot. I have to be able to watch comedy every single day before I go to bed. And that helps, right? Being able to laugh, smile, joke at the politics. You know, I gotta do my run of like either The Daily Show with Trevor Noah or Stephen Colbert or the Seth Meyer. You know, I gotta do at least something, you know, to make me laugh and smile and get me recentered. And so it may be small, but you know, it goes a long way.
Indeed, it does. You know, Dr. Lewis Hall. I remember watching this press conference last year where Dr. Anthony Fauci was asked a question, and his response was the next pandemic will be the mental health pandemic. And here we are some 7 or 8 months after he mentioned that. And it seems to be coming true for so many people. How do we get a handle on what may be a coming mental health crisis?
So as is often the case, Dr. Fauci was right on. The mental health pandemic is not coming, it is here. And if you think about our community, first let me say how sorry I am to hear about all of your losses. It's tragic what happens in our community, to our families, and your bravery and service is so we're so grateful for collectively as a community and as a nation. So I just want to say thank you and how sorry I am for your loss. We as a community are deep in the throes of a mental health crisis. The fear of COVID alone takes its toll. Our living situations in multi-generational homes, where we're caregivers to the young and the old, where we are disproportionately represented as essential workers on healthcare fronts and transportation and grocery stores and manufacturing, all of this puts us squarely in the path of a COVID infection, hospitalization, and death. And add to that, that we've been disproportionately affected by the economic pressures and tolls of this pandemic, with increased job losses, lowered wages or lost hours to the pandemic, the cost to small businesses. We can go on and on about the economic loss. And we shouldn't forget the additional pressure of being confronted with so upfront and personal with racism as a systemic health issue in this country, as a health risk. And start adding to that separation and isolation from our friends and family, grief at the loss of friends and family, and on top of that, the inability to support and grieve in the way that we're used to. And then last but not least, if none of those things have touched you, just plain living will get you. If you think about childcare, what am I gonna do about my child's education? How am I gonna get care so I can go to work? What am I gonna do if they become ill? What about their mental health? What does this mean for their future? They've already been called the lost generation. And our security, kind of our living circumstances, our family's health and security, and the list goes on and on. So we are under pressure in an incredible way. And the crisis was already headed our way. In 2018, there was a study that said, this is pre-pandemic, 69% of African Americans who had mental illnesses were not able to get mental health treatment. 42% of those with serious mental illnesses were not able to get care. And 88% of substance abuse, people who suffered with substance abuse were not able to get care. So if you add all of the things we just talked about, those additional stressors and pressures, a system that's kind of underwater with the care of patients with COVID, stigma, economic and access pressures. The mental health pandemic is here.
Mm-hmm. And if I could just add,
no, please go ahead.
I don't want to forget to the mental health stresses of also the children that are virtually learning. Just in my district alone, we've had one attempted suicide and three completions by ages of 10, 13, 15, and the attempted was a 12-year-old. So that also speaks to the level of stress that our community is under.
Who are you most concerned about it in your constituency, a council member, and what specifically are the biggest needs that have been brought on by the pandemic?
Well, I'll be honest. I'm not just concerned about my district. I'm concerned about the county. I think the county itself as a whole has disproportionately suffered as a county that is 80% a county of color. That speaks to how many vaccines we've received. How can we, as the county that has received the most amount of we have had the greatest level of contagion in this county, the greatest number, some of the most highest amounts of deaths here in the county, and now we have the least amount of vaccines and vaccine coverage here in this county. So, and that's why I'm determined as a council member working with an elite team to provide a solution that will be equitable at a national level that we can employ, not just countywide, but statewide and nationally wide, to address some of the concerns that were highlighted actually in your previous discussion.
Well, as you know, the governor has this equity task force for—
You got the answer. Yeah, I'm about to talk to him in a week or so.
I'd be really interested in hearing what you have to say to him, because working?
Well, what we're trying to propose is tackling the problem per household and on a community basis.
What does that mean per household?
So right now we're targeting people by ages, 75 and older, whether you work in a certain job or not. That's not working. It's clear it's not working. The systems are not working. Nobody's talking to each other. I don't want to digress here. I think this may be another topic. But the thing is that we need to bring an engineering solution. And I've brought some of the bravest, brightest minds in the country to come and tackle this. And I'm talking now to folks at Bowie State, at the University of Maryland, to come in and do the last leg. But what we need to do is have engineering systems in place that communicate with each other. That's the first thing. The second thing is we got to tackle the problem in a community. We've got buildings here we can put in place in each community and say, you know what, instead of you standing in line 6 or 7 hours or driving 5 hours away, you can go to your neighborhood building, community center, and you could get vaccine. Or everybody in every apartment, everyone in every house can get vaccinated at one time. And the safer route, where you're attacking the problem holistically, not just by the grandmother's not done, but the children, the mother, the caretaker's not taken care of. Everyone in the household is taken care of. And by that way, you're taking care of your teachers. If the children go back, your essential workers, because they interact with the public, your caretakers inside the house, you're treating the problem holistically. Mm-hmm.
And those, all of those things would, if they happen the way that you're proposing, would bring us back to the issue of a sense of safety. Feeling emotionally stable, because that's one less thing you have to worry about. Yeah.
About 600,000 vaccines in 20 days based on this plan that we've developed.
Dr. Lewis Hall, who are you most concerned about? Is it the children? Is it the mental health workers that we don't hear so much from anymore, who are still in the trenches of the hospitals and the nursing homes, or is it the parents of those children? Your thoughts about that and the mental health?
Yes.
Okay, there you go.
I'm concerned. I'm concerned about all of them. I'm very concerned. We just heard a story of significant family loss, and someone who said we're, strong and got to keep going, got to keep moving, got to walk it off. And I am most nervous for those who are serving in some capacity as caregivers, as parents, as people who are in the workplace, as healthcare workers, as, everyone that is continuing to apply themselves despite the fact that they themselves are under tremendous weight. My grandmother used to say, similar to your father, if I set myself on fire tonight to keep us warm, what are we gonna do tomorrow when it's cold? So for everyone that is kind of out and fighting this, to remember to do self-care. And we do need to build a new normal for ourselves. I hear a lot of people say, when do we get back to normal? I don't know if normal is what it used to be. And my mother used to say, don't let the storm disrupt your journey, let it clear your path. So I think that we have an opportunity to think about, okay, this is not what we planned. It's not what we were looking for. Self-care is really important. We have to be sure that we're able to stay in for the long haul. We need to be sure that we continue safe recommendations. We do not let our guard down now. We cannot let our guard down now. And we can begin to think about what some of those healthful and self-care platforms look like for us. So what might we be able to do to take care of ourselves in this new circumstance? So how do I eat better despite that, that food might not be secure in the same way that it used to? How do I exercise? How do I practice mindfulness and stay connected with my loved ones in new ways, create new traditions? So all of these things, I think, are a part of how we'll allow ourselves a steady state, if you would, staying the strong foundation that our families and our community need, but also at the same time to take care of ourselves, because we're not near done, right? We've got a ways on this journey to go still.
As a psychiatrist and as a Black woman, you know that historically mental health was just not something that was openly discussed in the Black community. And seeing a counselor, psychologist, psychiatrist, you know what was said. Black folks don't do that. Mm-hmm. Do you believe that this storm, this COVID-19 storm, has helped communities of color transition from the issue of stigma to the reality that this thing has hurt me emotionally, mentally, and I need to talk to somebody, and I don't mind talking about needing to talk to somebody?
I hope that that is the case, and I would strongly encourage people to look carefully at themselves and their ideas of stigma, and also to be sure to be supportive and mindful of friends and family members who may be showing signs of wear, if you would, changes in sleep, being overly anxious, irritable, blaming others, feeling distanced, not the social kind, but the other social kind, like just withdrawn, changes in appetite or changes in weight that can't be explained in other ways. And this should be a moment where, as serious as a cancer or diabetes or lupus or any other of the many diseases that disproportionately affect us, we have to be on the lookout for this. Because help remains available, we can reach out to friends, family, community leaders. There are hotlines and helplines. Telemedicine has begun to do a lot of work in the area of counseling and care. So I'm trusting, not to keep quoting folks, but my husband says, people don't change when they see the light, they change when they feel the heat. And this has certainly been some heat, and perhaps it'll change our minds about mental illness not being a weakness, and getting help not a sign of weakness.
What change, council member, have you seen in the county, and more specifically, you know, perhaps in your district over the past year, positive change that may have surprised you or made you say,
I wish I could point out to something. I know that at least in the county, people found ways for us to go to church in different ways and serve. I think that we came together as a community, right? I think that's what was so beautiful, that we were, I mean, on a weekly basis, I pulled a team of 227 volunteers weekly to work and serve the community in food drives that we did. I mean, we had like 9 food distribution sites weekly through until August. Now we have 6. And so we've got all hands on deck. And that was what, to me, was beautiful. But in hearing, I mean, I may have to hire Dr. Lewis. Oh, goodness. I mean, she hit it right on the money. I was like, woo!
It's the heat. It's not the light.
I know. I said, I got to take down these quotes. But in full disclosure, I mean, I'll speak to it very transparently and honestly. You know, my family does suffer from mental illnesses, and that's something that is very strong in my family. My mother committed suicide, so those are issues that are very close to me personally. And the thing is that those were issues that were not discussed in my family. And I think I wouldn't just say that that's the case in communities, in African-American communities. I will say that that's the case in all communities of color, that there is a stigma. The fight I have, or at least the tug and pull, if you will, is that, like the doctor said, is I've been in environments where folks have said, oh, you could pray it all away. Right. And I think that these kinds of issues, the depression, you know, whatever, I think that those are issues you've got to tackle head on. You've got to have in your pocket. You got to have a therapist in one pocket and a psychiatrist in the next.
Yeah.
And walk with both of them, you know.
Well said. I'm getting ready to close out, and I wanted to allow both of you at least a quick 30 seconds to talk about your thoughts about a realistic approach moving forward when it comes to mental health and the pandemic. I'll start with you, Dr. Lewis Hall, 30 seconds moving forward.
So I want to re-emphasize self-care. I also want to say there are such things as mental health emergencies. If anyone, you or someone in your family or a friend, is talking about hurting themselves or hurting someone else, please, please, please get them help. And make sure that you help smooth the pathway for people to believe that they can and should get help and get them to it.
Mm-hmm. From your perspective, council member, and you are, as I said, a public servant. You know, you are a lawmaker, but you are intimately connected to the difficulties of where we are right now. What would you say is the best way for the community that you serve to move forward when you're talking about mental health?
I do think that getting professional help is critical. I know that not everyone is capable of being able to pay for that. I just want to, but there are community resources that are going to be available, and they will be available soon. And I hope that everyone takes advantage of those resources that are, will be available. And we do have other resources, you know, that alleviate some of that stress and pressure. We have a rental assistance program. We have a programs helping, you know, provide you to pay your utility, your water, your electricity, those kinds of things. So those two, you know, look out. The thing is that sometimes because we're in a state of desperation, mm-hmm. we don't have time to mm-hmm. step outside and look what's out there for help. And the help exists. And we're able to fix those problems. I mean, think about it. Our county now has $25 million. That's more than all the money that's been paid in all of Prince George's County all of last mm-hmm. year. We just got that now.
Okay.
And we can pay 6 months worth of rent.
Yeah. Well, and it doesn't hurt to help each other either. And I think we can all agree mm-hmm. on that. We are out of time. And I wanted to thank the two of you and all of my guests for sharing their time and expertise with us. And we know this for sure, that this pandemic is far from over, and we all have to take a collective responsibility in not only protecting ourselves, but also safeguarding others. It is not a difficult choice. I want to thank you for joining this discussion. I'm Harold Fisher. Good health to you, and good night.